easily nor neatly put in a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, awakening a part of the mind as yet not mapped. And yet things every bit as real as the air we breathe but don't see. This is Dreamland.
This is Dreamland, Sunday evening once again, and we'd like to welcome KMJ in Fresno. KMJ Radio in Fresno, 580 on the dial, and a monster with a signal all over the place. Welcome to Dreamland. I'm Art Bell, and we're going to have a bit of a change-up this evening. Linda Howe, normally here at the top of the program, may or may not be with us nigh on to about the middle of the program. She just landed in Philadelphia, back home again from Puerto Rico. And so she's got to make it home and get in position before she can report. And it'll be interesting to see how the rest of Puerto Rico went. In the meantime, with us this evening is Sean David Morton, a very popular guest on the program. And it's been some time since Sean has been here. Just in a brief bio sketch, he's got a BA in political science, 16 units shy, I guess, of a degree in organic chemistry as well. A Bachelor of Fine Arts in Drama. Attended the London Academy of Music and Dramatic Arts for an advanced degree in drama. The British University of Cairo in Egypt, spent a year studying Arabic, Egyptology, and Middle Eastern political science. A post-doctorate degree in theology, lived in a Tibetan monastery at the foot of Mount Everest for 7 months, studied Buddhism, and has a fairly extensive television and, of course, here in other locations, radio background. So that's Sean David Morton, and Sean will comment in areas, for example, things connected to UFOs. Sean has done, for some time, predictions, of which his record looks pretty good. The Northridge quake, epicenter, magnitude, date missed by 10 days. The Malibu fires, the flooding in Texas and Georgia, the election of Bill Clinton by the exact percent, the reentry of Ross Perot into the presidential race, the 1989 San Francisco quake, and the 1992 Landers 7.6 quake. So that's not at all a bad record. And in just a moment, Sean David Morton. Psychic cooperation for these predictions, or not. Mm-hmm. But he's talked about a 9-point earthquake in Southern California. He's talked about a 9-point earthquake along the New Madrid Fault in the center of the country.
Yes.
And I guess I'd just like to ask, are you getting any of those vibes?
No, sir, I'm not. It's I have a great deal of respect for Mr. Scallion. I think he's a pioneer in a lot of different ways. His Earth Changes Report newsletter is certainly a very worthy publication. I think that Gordon is a very, very gifted gifted psychic. He's had some spectacular successes when it comes to predicting very specific quakes. However, Gordon in his newsletters, and we do actually trade newsletters back and forth, has been talking about a 9-plus mega quake in Southern California since May of 1993,
mm-hmm.
and it has yet to materialize. Not only myself, with Adelphi Associates as somebody who does meditations and is sensitive to these types of quakes, but also a network of people that I have contact with, which is why I call it the Adelphi Associates, is because we try to work with a group of people and can get as much of a consensus as possible as far as these types of earth changes. If it was going to happen anytime soon, a quake of that magnitude, we would certainly be feeling it. I have never seen that kind of quake for the Southern California area. I do believe that the major quakes, in other words, quakes that could actually destroy entire cities or take out economic centers,
mm-hmm.
are going to begin to occur in 1996, in the beginning part of 1996, and I've always contended that I've seen a substantial San Francisco quake that starts about 150 to 200 miles south of San Francisco and then moves up and destroys a pretty substantial portion of San Francisco, but not until 96. Now, what I am picking up, and I made these predictions on the NBC program The Other Side a few weeks back, is that I was getting specifically that there were that much of California, specifically right now, is very, very hot. I feel that there is a substantial heat in between the Palm Springs, in a triangle of land, between Palm Springs, San Bernardino, and Barstow.
Well, that is the area that Scallion's talking about.
Well, what I'm picking up is that I'm picking up a series of quakes in that area around February 16th, 17th, 18th, or 19th, that week. And then about the first week in March, epicentered, I'd say, plus or minus 5 days of around the 6th of March. What I'm getting is a substantial series of quakes, not only in that area, but also north in the Lancaster area, also in the Vallejo area, in a triangle between Vallejo, Concord, and Napa up in Northern California. I'm also picking up Redding and in the central part of California, in the central northern part of California. Redding and Mount Shasta are also very warm for quakes right now. Now, the February quake, and you can also see how the weather in California right now is gearing up for a substantial quake, but I do not think that the quake will be greater than a 7, even though that is a pretty big quake, but we have weathered quakes of 7.6 and greater in that particular area. If you remember the Landers quake of 1992. The way the weather is acting up is you have a specific pattern that's also kicking in. We've had substantial quakes in the Eureka area directly off the coast of Northern California, where you've got a number of quakes that come together, the top part of the San Andreas, the Mendocino Fault, and usually whenever you have big quakes in Eureka, you have a pattern that occurs where between 60 and 90 days, you will usually have substantial quake activity in Southern California.
Now, Sean, yeah. How are you relating the weather patterns to earthquakes?
Specifically because in Southern California, it being a desert, I've simply noticed from living here that the pattern is that you will get, we've just had the massive rains, which have, of course, soaked into the ground. We're now having a very unusual heat wave, which is beginning to dry everything out. And at the same time, when it's very hot during the day and very cold at night, the land masses are actually expanding and contracting, which makes them very, very susceptible to various types of lunar movement, full moons, new moons, astronomical alignments of planets that pull on the gravity of the Earth. And specifically, that particular area, that's what I'm picking up when I do my meditations in front of the map, that triangle near Palm Springs, San Bernardino, and up through Barstow, is particularly active as far as the fault lines go. It's still reacting from the Landers quake back in 1992. And that area of the desert, even though it also got a great deal of rain, is actually expanding and contracting with the very hot days and the very cold nights, and of course the water drying out.
Sure.
The area.
When you say that you do meditations before a map, I take it that's how you divine geologic problems?
Yes, I get a map of the United States and also specifically a map of California. There's a specific Tibetan meditation that I do that I was taught in the monastery in Nepal, where one becomes sensitive to the planets, and by focusing in on where energy is beginning to erupt from out of the planet, I get very specific visions of things as they occur. And they're not limited to geological visions. They're also limited to political predictions and visions of things that go on across the country that are affecting large masses of people, like economic collapses, assassinations, deaths of world leaders, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, as I said, I have a great deal of respect for Mr. Scallion, and I don't want to sound as if I don't. We sort of agree to disagree. It is, as I said, my belief.
Well, for one thing, it seems as though you have a general agreement. Both of you were saying California is very, very hot right now.
Yes, in those specific locations that I was just talking about, and I do believe that there are going to be a series of quakes that will occur, that will actually begin in 1996. There will be a quake, as I said, substantial quake activity late February, the early part of March, both in Southern California and in the Vallejo area just north of San Francisco. But I don't think anything greater than a 7, and I do think that they're going to be epicentered well outside of the cities.
Mm-hmm.
It is also my belief that there has been a spiritual veil of protection that has been thrown over California, specifically because of the fact that there is a great deal of spiritual development that is going on here, a great deal of political activism, and the whole point of making predictions like this is to warn people in advance so that they can do the proper prayer and meditation that can actually avert many of these catastrophes from occurring in advance. The whole point of this type of earthquake prediction is that people have a tendency to gather and build cities upon planetary ley lines, or dragon lines, if you will, lines of force. And as this energy begins to rise up out of the planet, depending on how people process the energy through their own bodies and process it properly through prayer, meditation, brotherhood, love, community, and all of the positive aspects, that energy then moves through them and creates a benefit in the planet around them.
You called it a spiritual veil of protection. What power is this, Sean? Where does it come from? It comes from the people, you're saying.
I think it comes from the people themselves. I think enough of the people themselves are starting to behave in the proper manner that they have created what I call biorelativity. And there's not a single religion on earth, not Buddhism, not Baha'i, not Islam, not Judaism, not original Christianity, that does not believe in what's called a biorelative aspect, that the way in which you behave in a certain moral fashion, in a certain honorable fashion, in a certain aspect of your own happiness and your own peace, has a great deal to do with what occurs in the planet around you, and that human beings are very much an interconnected part of that ecosystem, that biosphere, if you will, that is a biorelative aspect of how human beings interact not only with each other, but also interact with the land.
That's a kind of a spiritual collectiveness.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
What about how individuals affect themselves? Do they have the power, for example, to control their own health?
Absolutely, 100%. You see, as a matter of fact, most diseases and maladies have a great deal to do with the fact that people are not participating in life, and that health is an aspect of participation, and that when they participate in their lives and also with the lives of others, that's an aspect of health. When you love what you do, you rarely get sick. When was the last time you had the flu, Art?
It's been quite a while.
Well, it's because you love what you do. You really enjoy what you're doing. But people
I agree.
I'm sorry?
I do agree. I think it bears on your general health. What about specifically? I mean, if somebody, for example, comes down with cancer. I had a very good friend who did. And he gave up everything he was doing, moved up into the high mountains near Santa Cruz, California, meditated, ate well, went on special diets, did all kinds of things, and I'll be damned if he didn't come clear of cancer.
Mm.
And they gave him no chance to do that. So that's kind of why I asked the question.
Well, it's that change of attitude that is actually taking energy that manifests itself around the individual spiritually and then will metastasize as various types of diseases, cancer being the specific aspect of that, because it's everything starts in the auric field first, works its way inward, and then metastasizes itself as a reaction to a particular emotion.
What is the auric field?
The auric field is simply an energy field, a spiritual field that surrounds the body. Every living organism actually gives off a field of energy. We have on the very outer plane, we have the causal field, and then you can work your way into the what's called the etheric body, the spiritual body, the astral body, and then of course the mental and emotional bodies, which are much closer to the person themselves.
All right, hold on just one moment. We'll be right back to you. My guest is Sean David Morton. He'll be right back. When it comes to UFO phone free catalog, here it is: 1-800-350-4639. Call right now. Mention my name, Art Bell, and you get a free copy of Voyage to the Planets with your first purchase. 1-800-350-4639, UFO Central Home Video. Well, okay, let's talk for a second about telephones. If you own an old stuff, back again. With what time we have to the bottom of the hour, Sean, if you would update us, we'll kind of skip around here, update us on the UFO community. What's going on?
Well, what's happening at the moment, and I assume that this is one of the things that Linda Howe is going to be talking about in the next hour or so. There was quite a big flap going on down in Puerto Rico, specifically about an alien body that was supposedly found down there.
Right.
I do have a report that if your listeners are interested in picking it up from me, it was written by Jorge Martin, who's the editor of OVNI magazine down there. And in this report, it's about a 30-page report that's got actual photographs of this body. It's got some 22 different types of photographs. It's very, very unusual.
I take it you've seen them. Can you describe this alien body?
It's approximately between 18 and 24 inches tall. Uh-huh. Let me see. Did you say specifically? Okay, I've got the report here in front of me. 22 inches tall.
Mm-hmm.
It has a very large skull. It has no ears. In other words, slits or apertures on the side. Very long arms with extended forearms, four fingers with an opposable thumb, a webbing inside in between the fingers itself. The skull is very large. The skin is sort of a mottled grayish color with very, very large, large occipital eye holes. No teeth, with very hard gums, very small mouth. And the case was interesting because it was supposedly a young man who was in the military who was actually hiking in the woods outside of the capital city of Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the story, and it's actually funny the way it's told, he claims that a group of these beings actually came out from underground from a cave. In other words, a group of about 20 of these things knocked him down and were dragging him through the woods, dragging him towards this cave, this underground passage. He apparently woke up during the middle of the abduction, managed to grab onto a tree, pulled a branch off the tree, and then turned around and whacked one of these things in the head, and managed to fight off the rest of them, and apparently they ran back underground. Now, he then takes this body, puts it in a carton or a drum of formahol at his home, and then over the next 2 weeks or so had claims that he had to defend his home with a shotgun, that these beings were trying to actually break back into his house and try to get this creature back. And so the body then went from hand to hand, being passed to different neighbors, and eventually, supposedly now, is in the hands of a Puerto Rican police officer down there. And the goal here is, and this is why I'm interested to hear what Linda Howe has to say if she's been down here, the goal is that myself and another gentleman named Michael Hesseman, we're going to go down, get in contact with the people that we knew that had possession of this thing, try to get a piece or a slice of skin or bone from this creature to see if we could have the RNA DNA analyzed both here in the United States and also in Germany, and see what it is. See if
how good is the photograph?
They're excellent. And as a matter of fact, I'll mail you a report if your listeners are interested in getting a report. Basically, I think $10 just covers my printing for the report, printing and postage. So,
all right, we will get the address on. We're here at the bottom of the hour. Sean, stand by. And we'll see what we can do about getting photographs of this creature. Fascinating. Puerto Rico, huh? All right, we're going to pause here at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to Dreamland from the high desert on a Sunday night. I'm Art Bell.
Food for the mind.
Tonight's broadcast is an encore presentation. Please do not call in.
From the Kingdom of Nye, we continue with your calls on Dreamland with Art Bell. Call Art now, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-TALK. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Or the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. 727-1295 in the 702 area code. Now again, here's Art Bell.
Now, once again, here I am. We're going to try and take care of the commercial continuity here at the beginning of the half hours. Fascinating about Puerto Rico, there sure have been a lot of rumors coming out of Puerto Rico. A lot of strange things going on in Puerto Rico and elsewhere in the world where currencies have been not exactly stable. Mexican currencies. Sean David Morton is the president and founder of Prophecy Research Institute. He has penned a couple of books, one called The Millennium Factor and the other The Gulf Breeze Prophecies. And he now has a newsletter called the Delphi Associates Newsletter. And we were kind of on that when we left the bottom of the hour. Sean, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right. So you've got a newsletter, and I'm sure you would like to tell people how to get it.
Absolutely.
First, tell us what's in your newsletter. What kind of stuff is in there?
Specifically, political predictions, economic predictions, updates on earthquake predictions, earth changes, commentary on what's happening all around the world, specifically with inside information that I get from very, very high-level both military intelligence sources and sources within the media. So it's a heck of a bargain. I've got a lot of your listeners who subscribe to it. I was inundated by your listeners the last time I was on the show with hundreds of new people that subscribed to the newsletter. It's $45 a year for 12 issues. It's 12 pages long, comes every month, and it's just jammed with all of the information and all the stuff that you can't get anywhere in the establishment media. And of course, is a perfect complement to your program, specifically because we talk very much about the same things that you cover in your program in the newsletter every month.
Mm-hmm.
And
you like a professional baseball player are held to a standard, your batting average, so to speak.
Yes.
How are you doing?
Pretty darn good, actually. I mean, let me see, to give you an example, the Northridge quake, the infamous October issue of the newsletter predicted the Malibu fires, the Northridge quake, missed it by 10 days. I predicted that the quake would happen between the 23rd of December and the 7th of January, and it was actually the 17th. To give you an idea of a miss, I had predicted that I thought that there was going to be a 6.6 quake in Landers, specifically on the 19th of November, and instead the quake was only a 4.7. But it was still a substantial quake on the exact date in the exact location. And I've had some spectacular hits as far as misses go. I try to be very, very specific in my predictions. The visions are usually I would say 95% correct. Sometimes my interpretations of the visions, however, leave something to be desired.
I would like to understand the context of your visions. When you have a vision, I take it that it comes after a period of meditation. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
What form does it take? You've got to draw, this is radio, so you've got to kind of draw a mental picture for us. What do you see?
Well, I'll be drawn, when I'm doing specific geological predictions, I'll be drawn to a particular area of a map where I'll feel energy coming over the map and run my hands over the map to the point of where I feel energy coming out of it. Then I'll meditate on that very specific point of the map, and I will then get feelings in my body, specifically as far as maybe earthquakes or hurricane, wind, rain, floods, which is how I predicted the flooding in Texas. And when it comes to political predictions as well, I begin to get names. I begin to get sometimes letters and numbers from the predictions. Just recently in the newsletter, I was talking about the first 10 days of December were going to be a very dark time around Washington, D.C., and that I specifically was seeing death at the White House. And my interpretation of that was that someone was going to do something to Bill Clinton, mm-hmm. and instead there was a man shot on the sidewalk right in front of the White House. So that gives you an idea of how sometimes the visions themselves are correct. It's my interpretations of them sometimes that are a bit off. So we actually had the death at the White House the first 10 days of December. It wasn't the person that I expected it to be. However, it was a person who, of course, was shot down by a security guard who was wielding a knife directly in front of the White House.
How do you try and perfect the process of interpreting what it is that you see?
A lot of times in the newsletter, I'll simply put it down as to what the vision is, and then specifically point out what it is I'm looking at, and then what the vision looks like, and then I will separately put what my interpretation of the vision is. At the same time, because we are called the Prophecy Research Institute, I have some very excellent people that work with me. The head of my research department, Robert Egan, as an example, is sort of a Nostradamus buff. So he's constantly analyzing various quatrains of Nostradamus, and we put those analyses in the newsletter as well to give people an idea of the overall trend. At the same time, I've studied the Great Pyramid in Cairo that is quite literally a time coding in stone that once you understand the coding of the pyramid gives very specific dates and times for major world events that are about to occur.
Okay, are you, by the way, familiar with the recent finds in Egypt? They think they've got the tomb of Alexander the Great.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been predictions of more finds in Egypt this year. What do you think?
Well, here's the interesting thing about Egypt. Having lived in Egypt as a kid and also having just come back from there last September, October, there's a lot of stuff in Egypt that there's a difference between finding things, and they've known that things have been under the Sphinx for a long time. I believe that they're going to find the entrance to the Great Library of Atlantis, and I mean, I can tell you where it is. There's a, if you go off the right paw, there's a gazebo, sort of a town square, that's just across from the Sphinx, where there's a fountain on a raised hill, and it's literally the only raised object between the Sphinx's paw and the Nile. And for many years, the townspeople have known that there's something under there. The problem is that once you report that there's something, say, under your property, and it's an antiquity, the farmer will usually lose his property because it comes up to the, it becomes the property of the state. And
sure.
They basically come in and bulldoze your house and take away your farm and start digging everything up. So there's been, they'll find massive new things, I think, in Egypt because I think that the people are ready to begin talking about some of the history and some of the culture and allowing the government to come in and have a little bit more of a hand because they see that Egypt is desperately trying to break away and become independent, specifically based off its tourism. And, of course, the best way to do that is through these archaeological finds. But they will find underneath an entire catacomb, which is what Edgar Cayce talked about for many years, spoke of the fact that there was an Atlantean library left over from a previous civilization at which the Sphinx is the actual entrance to this. And now they've just did a documentary called Mysteries of the Sphinx, and Robert Watts, who was the producer of that, was a very good friend of mine. And using this new ultrasound technique that was developed by Dr. Jim Dellatoso, who became famous for analyzing all of the UFO photographs in the Billy Meyer UFO case,
mm-hmm.
using this technique now, they're ultrasounding underneath the ground and finding all sorts of fantastic new caverns and chambers and relics from Egypt's past.
Wow. So much to talk about. You've got a prediction down here
mm-hmm.
about Bosnia as the beginning of the Fourth World War
yes.
and the destruction of a U.S. aircraft carrier in the Adriatic. Now, I must have missed the Third World War, or has that still not happened?
Well, technically, you can actually look at the war Desert Storm as literally being the Third World War, because the Third Great World War was literally 150-some-odd countries allied against Saddam Hussein. Every single country in the world was represented in that war. And so technically, one would count that as a third world conflict simply because there were so many countries. NATO was involved, the United States was involved, England was involved, France was involved. I'd hardly call it a world war, but it was, in fact, a skirmish in which every country in the world was specifically involved. And Saddam Hussein is going to be very important in the next 2 years or so because I believe that Hussein is going to be removed from power. And when Hussein is removed from power, you're going to see a bloodbath in the streets, some 50,000 to 60,000 people that are directly connected with his political party are going to be torn apart by the Iraqi people, and that will be the beginning of the alliance of Iraq and Iran, and those are the two specific countries that need to be watched as forming the beginning of what's going to be called, known as the Islamic Jihad. And this Islamic Jihad will begin to link all of the various Islamic countries together using flashpoints like Grozny and Bosnia as battle cries, quite literally, to begin an attack upon Europe that I see beginning in July of 1999 with a nuclear attack on the United States from a submarine, specifically at York City.
A nuclear attack from a submarine, an attack on New York City?
Yes, in July of 1999. This is one of the very specific predictions that Nostradamus gives that's very much a linchpin for many of his prophecies. And information that's just come to me as of yesterday was a very good friend of mine who's very high up in military intelligence was raving on the phone yesterday that there is a very clear and present danger right now from submarine attack to the United States because they've dismantled something in the Atlantic called SOSUS, which is the Sonic Oceanic Submarine Underwater Surveillance System. It took us almost 25 years to build this submarine surveillance system. We used to have hundreds of people at listening posts, primarily listening for Soviet submarines, and now it has been so defunded by the Clinton administration.
Wow.
All of these cuts that he talks about are virtually all military cuts, and now we have, out of, I think, a staff of almost 1,000, which were manning these listening posts, both in the Atlantic and in the Pacific, now we're left with 4 guys that are basically listening to this.
You're telling me, then, the SOSUS system, for all intents and purposes, is not even operating?
Correct.
And again, that is a system that detects underwater submarine activity. It's how we track Russian submarines,
exactly.
Submarines in general. Do you have any idea where this attack will come from? What nation?
It'll be Iran.
Iran.
And Iran is going to be where the third great Antichrist is going to come from. And when I say Antichrist, a world leader specifically that will link the Islamic countries together that will be involved in the last great world war against the United States. What I'm seeing for what's going to happen in Bosnia is there's going to be peace in Bosnia specifically until late June or July. There's going to be a massive effort to try to get out the UN troops out of Bosnia, who are going to be caught primarily in Bihac. There are 2 aircraft carriers that are going to be stationed in the Adriatic. One is going to be the Eisenhower, and the other one is going to be the USS Enterprise. And I see the Eisenhower being either sunk or crippled by Serbian missiles. Hard to do with a United States destroyer, but
yes, it is.
Literally you are going to see the Eisenhower in the news as being attacked by Serbian positions. At the same time, this is going to link up with what I see going on in Russia with the removal of Boris Yeltsin from power, possibly by as early as May, and the replacement of Boris Yeltsin with Viktor Zhirinovsky.
No.
And that's what's up right now. And I believe that with Zhirinovsky in power, the relative peace that has existed between the United States and the Russians will pretty much end. And you're going to see in just Bihac in the northern part of Bosnia, and there'll be very specific numbers. I keep getting 300,000 either dead or imprisoned in that one particular area.
God.
And basically Bosnia is going to suck us into this war.
All right. Now, you made these predictions on NBC's The Other Side last Thursday. Is that correct?
Not these predictions specifically. We were talking specifically about earthquakes. I was talking about the...
Okay, so you confined what you said on NBC to geologic activity?
Well, yeah, and they had me on at the end of the show, actually after, I think, a psychic earthquake sensing dog, so it was...
I see.
It was a little bit difficult to take the whole thing seriously, but specifically what I talked about on The Other Side was that I felt that... Eureka continues to be dangerous in Northern California, and that I was picking up activity in Redding near Mount Shasta.
Mm-hmm.
I see quakes in a triangle in Northern California between Novato, Napa, and Vallejo. Cloverdale and Parkfield are very hot, so you need to watch for a 6.0 or above in the Parkfield area by the end of June, and this is a precursor to megaquake activity in California. This triangle of land I see heating up in Palmdale, Redlands, and Northridge, a 5, no greater than a 6 there, but the 18th, 19th, and 20th of February, I believe, is going to be the beginning of much larger quake activity out in the desert area, the Palm Springs,
yes.
Barstow, San Bernardino Triangle.
All right. Gordon Michael Scallion predicted accurately an earthquake about 50 miles from Mount Rainier.
Yes.
He said this is the precursor to Mount Rainier going. And he thinks fairly soon. You also have a prediction about Mount Rainier, but again, yours seems to go off to 1996. Is that correct?
Well, Mount Rainier has been really difficult because Mr. Scallion and I have agreed on this. I was probably the first one to talk about quakes in the at the foot of Mount Rainier, of quakes in the 5.5 to 6 range before Mount Rainier goes. Mount Rainier is a very important trigger for a series of prophecies, because if Mount Rainier blows, The mountain itself is about 15,000 feet high, and it has a huge mantle. And if Rainier goes, it has the potential of dumping so much soot and ash into the atmosphere that it would have the capability, and actually weather experts are claiming that the very expected likelihood that the ash from Mount Rainier will lower the temperature of North America by almost 3 degrees.
Mm.
Now, to give you an idea of this, when Mount Pinatubo exploded in 1991, Pinatubo dumped so much soot into the atmosphere, which was then carried into the United States, that it lowered the temperature of North America by about 0.5 to about 1 degree, which is what started causing a large number of these of the massive weather-related catastrophes that you've seen, the record winters because of all of this there. Now, I've been talking about Mount Rainier for some time, and
what about the immediate consequences for people, for example, in the Seattle area?
Well, it'll be a lot like what happened in Mount St. Helens. I mean, obviously they're going to be under a great deal of soot. I'm not exactly sure how dangerous gases coming up out of the mountain will affect the people in Seattle. There is going to be talk about evacuating sections of Seattle. The real tragedy is that they're at the bottom of this volcano, and Seattle has absolutely no earthquake preparedness, no volcano preparedness. They were rated in a report by the United States Geological Survey as being the least prepared city for this type of natural catastrophe in the world. And the Chinese have a saying that when you build your house next to a dragon, it should not matter that the dragon is sleeping. And so many of these people have built their homes and their entire city at the foot of a volcano, which is very, very dangerous. And there's an old Indian legend also which states that when little sister speaks, the big brother will answer.
Yes.
And the American Indians have always talked about Mount St. Helens being little sister, and that Mount Rainier was big brother, and that it was only a matter of time before Mount Rainier actually blew. And a quake, as I said, of about a 6 to a 6.5 or so in the Seattle area will be a precursor to the eruption of Mount Rainier.
All right. We're on the air on KVI, of course, in Seattle. And so I'm sure they're listening rapidly to what you're saying. Sean, if you lived in Seattle right now, what would you do?
Well, the thing about volcanoes is that unlike earthquake prediction, which is somewhat of an arcane psychic science, there's a great deal of warning that comes before a volcano. They have sensors all over that mountain. And so this is of course if the government agrees to actually warn the people in Seattle before something like this occurs. But they knew well in advance before Mount St. Helens blew and were able to evacuate much of the towns of Mount St. Helens there in Washington and Oregon.
What do you know about policy with regard to warnings? For example, if there was going to be a catastrophic quake and they had 24 hours notice in Southern California, would they tell everybody or not?
Well, they didn't here in Southern California. The calls that I got here was that, and I got calls from friends of mine who were paramedics, and they were in the air 24 hours a day in emergency mode 8 days before the Northridge quake actually occurred. And they were calling me on the phone saying, look, I don't know what's going on, but something is about to happen. It's costing the city $75,000 to $100,000 a day to have these emergency paramedics up in the air, and we don't know why we're up here. At the same time, there were military maneuvers moving in water, moving in certain types of food supplies.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of trucks that were leaving with government files, specifically IRS and tax files. Moving them to the eastern parts of California and into Arizona. So I think that the Northridge quake, not only did they have substantial warning of it and did not inform the populace, but there is also, and I don't know if we have time to get into this tonight, I think we talked about it on a previous show, but there was also some, well, I think a great deal of evidence that the Northridge quake was somehow artificially induced. And that the quake was induced specifically to relieve the kind of pressure on the San Andreas Fault that so many people have been talking about, to relieve the 9-plus mega quakes that were building along the San Andreas up in Lancaster, Palmdale, all the way up into Parkfield and Cloverdale.
How do you induce a quake?
There were three ultrasound ELF frequency stations in Beatty, Nevada, right outside of Area 51.
Yes.
At Edwards Air Force Base and at Moffett Field.
Yes, but is that not to monitor ELF activity prior to an earthquake as opposed to causative fact. Look, we're at the top of the hour, so we'll have to pick this up next hour. Okay, Sean?
Okay.
All right, stay right where you are, and we will try and get lines open in this next half hour. We'll also find out how it is you cause earthquakes. We'll be right back.
This is Frontiers, a space and aeronautics report. To get weather reports from space, first you need a weather station. So NASA recently launched the WIND spacecraft to monitor the solar system's equivalent of weather, the solar wind of electrically charged particles streaming constantly from the sun. These particles can interact with Earth's magnetic field to disrupt electrical power grids and interrupt satellite transmissions. Understanding that interaction is the goal of the International Solar Terrestrial Physics Program. Project scientist Mario Acuna says that WIND and other spacecraft in the series will deepen our knowledge of the Earth-Sun system,